Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Great to be back with you again. I know we've had some abbreviated weeks over the last couple of weeks. Thanks to Kevin for putting up with my schedule changes.
We had Russell on last week, which is a big treat.
That's
still
awesome.
And Eric was able to.
Eric was able to
day.
Do it, and he was able
so
to.
So we made the best of it.
I'm glad that you did, and I appreciate that. And not much I can do about scheduled flight changes to get me to all points between here and Tampa, but I wasn't going to, you know, say no to a trip to Tampa. I'm sorry. On December the 1st, where it was 60 degrees
especially
and the sun was out.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just the way it is. I mean, let's see. Do I want snow and rain, cold weather, or do I want sun and 60? I don't really see where there's a big problem. But it's over. My regular season is complete with football. Basketball travel will, again, pick up, but not until the latter part of this month because the college basketball teams that I cover are all getting ready to take their semester exam breaks at the end of this week and be gone for about 10 days. So it's football, football, and more football, which I know I like and you like, and so let's just get right down to it. All right, it's Nitpick Tuesday in the playbook. Email webradio at patriots.com, the ACE ticket hotline, 508-298-0398, 508-298-0398. Jump aboard as come to you from the Subway Fresh Broadcast Studios inside Gillette Stadium. Facebook page open and operating and ready to take your posts and your comments. If you're not a friend on Facebook, you can find me. John Rook is the last name, R-O-O-K-E. It's how you spell it. Submit the friend request, and we'll answer it. And then you can post, and you can comment, and you can even chat during the program, which several of you do. And it's a neat way to kind of stay in contact with the show, even when the show is not on. And then, of course, there's also a Twitter page, and you can follow me on Twitter, at J-Rook, J-R-O-O-K-E, 0722. That's the Twitter page. Now, you've got me socially, you've got me unsocially, you've got me every which way but loose. But that's okay, because it's all about trying to exchange some football information and talk to football fans. Now, I have my own semi-thoughts about the game on Sunday. I don't think there's any question, and I know that Adam and the guys in the postgame show, they talked about it during the postgame. I know that Paul and PFW guys were talking about it as well over the course of the last day or so. Quite frankly, I would share a lot of the sentiment. There's no excuse. There is absolutely no excuse for 21 unanswered points to an 0-12 team in the fourth quarter. None, zero, zip, zilch, nada. How many more times, how many more ways can I say it? Maybe that's part of the reason why Coach Belichick was so curt, and I think that's a good adjective to describe his demeanor in the postgame conference when he laid into a couple of reporters.
I'm not really into solving the world's problems.
Yeah, curt, I think, was the proper way to sort of verbalize what Belichick was after the game, because he couldn't have been happy either. But there clearly was a loss of focus at 31-3. There clearly was an I don't give a you know what at 31-3. And I'm talking on both sides of the football now. Championship teams, as I'm sure many of you are aware, championship teams know how to step on the jugular, all right? They know how to put the pedal to the metal. They know how to finish the job. This team is not there yet, and I think we can all agree on that. Yet, at 9-3, the way that the tiebreakers, you know, figure out today, and I know this has probably been discussed already, but the Patriots are actually the number one seed in the AFC today. May not stay that way over the course of the last 4 weeks. Even if the Patriots win out, it might not stay that way. But as of today, if the season were over, and of course you've heard that cliche before, the season's not over, but if it were, the Patriots are the number one seed in the AFC. which means that you'd have to consider the Patriots certainly a favorite in the AFC for the Super Bowl. Now, I'm watching Green Bay play against Detroit on Sunday as well. I'll watch a little bit of that game. I don't know if anybody else happened to catch that. I actually thought Detroit kind of shot themselves. No, it wasn't. It was New Orleans. Thank you. New Orleans, not Green Bay. New Orleans. Green Bay had their own battle with the Giants. And I watched both games a little bit. And I have to tell you, first of all, where New Orleans is concerned, they have, in my estimation, risen into a contending status in the NFC. Drew Brees has got his team rolling offensively. I think there's still question marks defensively. Certainly Green Bay and the way that Aaron Rodgers brought his team back against the Giants when it looked like the Giants were going to pick them off. Less than a minute to go. Anybody else have any flashbacks? Left too much time on the clock. Hello, Tom Brady. Aaron Rodgers is every bit the quarterback that Tom Brady is. I think you even have to admit that even hardcore Patriots followers have to realize that there is another really good quarterback in the league not named Manning. And I'm not talking about Eli either. Aaron Rodgers, 50 seconds left on the clock, more than enough time. The Giants scored too early. Otherwise, they'd have beaten Green Bay. And what a feather in the Giants' cap that would have been. They could have been 8-4 with wins over arguably the two best teams in the league, in Green Bay and New England. And yet the Giants still lead that division. So, you know, offensively speaking, there are at least two, I would say right now, two other teams that certainly match the Patriots and what the Patriots can do offensively. That would be Green Bay. That would be New Orleans. Defensively, the only defense right now that I don't know about you, and again, I want to get your thoughts today, but the only defense about you, that I'm thinking of, that I think concerns me from a Patriot perspective, probably would be Baltimore. Although, if you play Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, depending on how the thing breaks down, and if Pittsburgh is the wild card, which is the way it would break down, then the Patriots still don't have that. I mean, they even with a head-to-head, the Patriots would finish ahead, I believe, by virtue of the division championship, and they would have the home game here at Gillette. Sounds crazy, but I believe that's how it would break down. And I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, which is fine. But Pittsburgh on the road would bother me a little bit. Pittsburgh here at Gillette doesn't bother me as much. Baltimore is going to bother me. I would, even though the Patriots have beaten the Jets twice, I would welcome that opportunity. And the reason that I would welcome that opportunity if the Jets squeezed into the playoffs is because I just don't see the Patriots falling back into that comfort zone, because of what the Jets did to them last year in the playoffs. I think too many guys on this team still remember what happened. I think too many guys on this team still remember what happened in Baltimore 2 years ago. And I think because we've been talking about it a lot, it's been circling over their heads like the buzzard getting ready to move in for the kill, the specter of not winning a first-round playoff game for 3 years now. I think this team is going to be focused for a first game, whether they get the bye or whether they have to play on wild card weekend. And it's looking more and more like they're going to be in great position for a bye. If they went out, you'd have to say that they're going to be right there. Again, there's too many factors involved right now in terms of who could win, who could lose, yada, yada. I think we'll begin to narrow this down over the course of the next couple of weeks, but there's still 4 weeks. We've got a solid month left to go in the regular season. A lot of time still to go before we start really taking a look at it. But I think this team will be okay with that. I do think that in spite of 21 unanswered to a team that is now 0-12, which is unforgivable, inexcusable, it's one of the biggest gaffes that this team has had this year. This team is still in position to win the AFC. That is a byproduct of the season of 2011. Now, whether or not you want to say that it's part of the late start, I think that there's probably something to that. The fact that teams had to basically start evenly in terms of practicing, there's probably something to that. I think there's probably something to the fact that, you know, there's just so much emphasis on, you know, spread offenses and people and teams moving the ball up and down the field. I just don't think defenses have caught up completely yet. There's just not a dominating defense in the NFL. You can move on Baltimore. You can move on Pittsburgh. You certainly can move on Green Bay. What are they, 31st in yardage allowed? But Green Bay's big deal is they create turnovers. Kind of like what the Patriots did a little bit last year, although the Patriots' defense statistically wasn't as poor last year as it is this year. So you can get by, I think, with a mediocre to average defense as long as your defense is creating turnovers, and that will be key for the Patriots' defense to ramp up, because I think the defense that this team has is what we're gonna is what we have. It is what it is, right? Thank you, Bill. It is what it is. This is the team you're going to have. I don't know that it gets appreciably better, although it was nice to see Devin McCourty come back, step in the right direction. Hopefully we can get him back in some kind of, you know, near freshman year shape, because he has not had a good sophomore season in the NFL. Certainly not Pro Bowl caliber as he had a year ago. The, you know, safety position has been a complete and total abomination, with all due respect to the players who are in there now, and I can't even remember their names. It's been that kind of a It's been that kind of a revolving door. It's been a joke. And you cannot tell me it's all injuries. It's not all injuries. There are players that this, you know, coaching staff and these those who evaluate talent that they for some reason like and they keep around, or they don't like and they ditch. And those opinions do not mesh with mine or any of the PFW guys, with the exception of Taylor Price, and yours. They run the team. We're fans of the team. We talk about the team. Big difference, right? Okay. So we certainly have the ability to talk about it and look at it individually. But when their evaluation gets to a point that now the players that were kind of sort of weak to begin with are getting hurt, and now you're bringing in street free agents to pretty much, you know, take up the slack, well, then somebody else has to accept a little bit of the blame here. And I don't think that the defense giving up 21 points like that in the fourth quarter has anything to do with the personnel. I think it has everything to do with the play calling, and I think it has everything to do with the execution of that play calling. And it was just, it was, everybody slacked off. And if Bill Belichick is calling the plays on defense, then they slacked off. He slacked off. He has to bear the brunt of that responsibility. He is the, you know, quote-unquote football genius, defensive genius. I know we like to make a lot of fun of that. I know you fans like to make a lot of fun of that. Nobody's seen any genius this year. But I don't know that that was necessarily the point. I don't think that this team was built to have success based on an overwhelmingly dominant defense. That's not how this team was built. I think this team realizes that, you know, the building of the franchise and the rebuilding of the personnel on this team was going to be a work in progress. That they felt like, you know, the best chance to win in the, at this current stage of rebuild was to augment slightly what you already had on offense and then find some workable, movable, adaptable parts on defense. Now, complicating the process is the fact that they have missed on personnel decisions. They've made some really strong ones. Pretty hard to say that Rob Gronkowski's not a good pick when he's probably the best tight end in the NFL right now. Defensively, they've made some mistakes. And there's been some underperforming. And there's been some disappointment. Lee Bodden, for one, not accepting a role. That's a disappointment. That's something I'm sure the team did not count on happening. You might have put too much of a burden on Jerod Mayo, and then he got hurt. Jermaine Cunningham, disappointment? Well, I'd say so. You know, the defensive line can only do so much. And yet you've got a disappointment in there, too, when you had Haynesworth in. Didn't quite turn out the way that they had hoped it would. It didn't. You move on. And now some of these guys that you're depending on a lot are getting hurt, and you're having to put people in positions they're not used to playing. I mean, Matthew Slater playing at safety? Really? 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 I sit there, I make myself laugh when I think about it. I mean, again, I'm not denigrating Matthew Slater. He's doing what he was asked to do, and I thought he did very well. I thought he accounted for himself very well. Why? First of all, he's a good kid. Second of all, he's a good athlete. Third of all, he's smart, and he can adapt. Julian Edelman's similar. Troy Brown, similar. And the Patriots have, keep in mind now, we've talked about this here, the Patriots have in the past, they have brought people into the roster based on their versatility. Now, if that means, you know, offense and defense, you know, I'm not sure that they plan on bringing them in with the idea that, hey, this receiver could play defense. I don't think so. But I think once they get them in and they see their athleticism, they're thinking, you know, could use somebody like that back there. Number one, we're woefully thin. Number two, he moves well, he gets to the ball, and on special teams, he sticks. And that's what Matthew Slater does. He's special teams captain of this team. So they respect him enough to know that he can get the job done, that he'll take it seriously. Matthew Slater is the anti-Lee Bodden. I mean, I know Bodden was a corner and Slater's playing safety. All I'm saying is that they're getting out of Slater what they had hoped to get out of Bodden and some others on this team they didn't get. So this is what they're left with. Now, why they're in this position, okay, again, it's up to the coaches and it's up to the personnel people to make these decisions to bring these people in. You have a defense that bends a lot. Bends too much, but you also still have a defense that when the game is on the line has learned grudgingly how to make a stop, come up with a big play, get off the field when earlier in the year this defense couldn't get off the field. And that's the major improvement that I've seen with this defense. It doesn't happen every time you want it, but then again, this is the NFL, this is the 21st century, and this is a league predicated on offense now and has been for several years. Eventually, defense will catch back up. It always does. All things are cyclical in life and in the NFL. You can make book on that. But what they have done is they've learned how to make stops, and they've stayed relatively stingy in the red zone, forcing field goals rather than give up touchdowns. This last weekend against Indianapolis, notwithstanding, because they just flat out gave up. They quit. They stopped playing. 31-3 over an 0-11 and team. We all went to sleep. I went to sleep. You went to sleep. The offense and defense went to sleep. So if I went to sleep and you went to sleep, why are we blaming the offense and defense? I realize they're paid to play the game. I understand that. I'm sort of just making conjecture here. They went to sleep. There's no excuse for it. Now, I don't think that this will happen again, but it certainly is a nitpick worth talking about. It's overwhelmingly number one at the top of my list. Because I was just as, you know, I mean, did I have any money on it? No. And those of you that would have taken the 21 points or taken the Patriots in the 21, you're flat out, you're just dumb. You're just dumb. I think out of the last 10, I read a number yesterday, and I can't remember where I read it, otherwise I'd be giving credit to it. But I read a number where I believe out of the last 10 games in the NFL that have had 21 point or more spreads, only two have covered. That's the nature of the NFL. When you see that kind of a spread, you run the hell away. Or you take the dog. It's that simple. So the funny thing to me about the fourth quarter, I don't know about you, Kevin, if you noticed this, but the funny thing to me was is as soon as the Colts scored to make it 31-17, that's when the mass exodus started because the spread was no longer covered. Did you notice that?
I did as well.
31-17. It was 31-10. People were still hanging around because the outcome, you know, odds-wise was in the balance. But when it was 31-17, woof.
Yep. I noticed that as well.
So, you know, it's kind of like, well, they're not going to cover, so we're out.
And then it got interesting in the last minute.
Well, it got interesting last minute when they had to cover a stinking onside kick.
Yeah. It's embarrassing.
I was almost rooting for the Colts to cover. Swear. God's honest truth. I mean, you know, we don't, at least I try not to, root. Not really our job. I can't admit that to the NFL because they've, you know, threatened to fine us in the past for the whole first down garbage. You know that, and I've told you that many times. And, of course, now everybody in the NFL copies us. But
it's a copycat league, as they say.
Indeed it is, and it will remain so. We need to come up with something new, by the way. Should we come up with something? Let's open it up. We should open it up to our listeners.
See if we can throw another Rook wrinkle into the in-stadium experience.
I think this is a good idea. I think this is where Facebook fans and our Facebook followers can contribute. I'll get to that more in a moment. All I'm going to say is they you know, I wanted him to cover the ball. I wanted him to cover the ball just to see if they'd throw everybody back out there and if they could actually get the stop that they would need to get before the Colts had a chance to tie the stinking score. Talk about an utter embarrassment. It was already an embarrassment, but that would have been an utter embarrassment.
Yeah, I thought we spoke about it on the pregame social, and especially last Thursday when Eric was covering for you, John. Eric had some trepidation heading into this game.
Yeah.
He was really the only person on Patriots.com radio that felt kind of nervous, like this could be a letdown game. And in many respects, Eric was right, given the final score and the situation that the Patriots were in. But, you know, when I spoke to him and we spoke to Russell, I said I wanted to come out of this game. When you look at it from a fan's perspective, you wanted the Patriots to come out of this game feeling good about themselves.
Right.
Good about how they played. And maybe some guys that normally don't get a chance to play a lot get a chance to play.
Well, that did happen to a small extent in the fourth quarter.
But here's the thing. I wanted them to do well and feel good about themselves,
right,
build confidence.
And
I didn't want to come out of the game with a win feeling like it was a loss, and that's precisely what happened.
Yeah. The guys that you wanted to see in the game got into the game a little bit and did not perform at all. Not just a little bit, zero. So that is a little bit of concern, especially if there are other injuries that happen over the course of the last month and then these guys are forced to play. Then you got some concern. All right, so what's your biggest nitpick? I'm sure there are others. I've got some superlatives to pass along as well, as we always usually do on Tuesdays, given the time for it. 508-298-0398, web radio at patriots.com. Hit me on Facebook and Twitter. I'm going to sneak in a timeout. Derek, I'm going to get right to you coming up, and we're going to jump into this in the playbook today.
Dear business traveler high in the sky, it's for important work that you do fly. But on JetBlue, we've made your job more fun with free DirecTV to play when your tasks are done. And with 40-plus nonstop straight from Boston, you won't have layovers to cities like Austin. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Luana, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand by flying JetBlue for business. Book now at JetBlue.com/business. DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Hey Tom, what's on your holiday wish list?
Joy and happiness to all.
Oh, because I was thinking of giving you packaged coffee from Dunkin' Donuts.
Ooh, that's better.
Nothing beats Dunkin's packaged coffee. Right now, buy 3 pounds and get a fourth free. Only at Dunkin' Donuts restaurants. So give America's favorite coffee as a gift or stock up yourself. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Happy holidays, everyone! Glad you could make it to the house! Who's up for some Dunkin' coffee?
Yeah.
Grandma, let's start with you!
Hazelnut, please!
Cousin Mark?
Original blend!
Vanessa?
Your holidays are covered with Dunkin' coffee. Buy it by the pound or try our new Dunkin' K-Cup packs. Only at Dunkin' stores. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football.
and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards Credit Card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Bank of America, the official bank of the New England Patriots. Copyright 2011, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochette. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never-been-owned-before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Droid. Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Horizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
All right, guys, ready for 2 weeks in the wild or what?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, then strap on those backpacks.
Hey, let me just check this text.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, no.
What?
Not now.
What is it?
McRib is back.
What?
We're gonna miss it.
This backpack just got really heavy, guys.
Everybody back in the car. We are going to McDonald's.
Yeah, good.
McRib is back for just $2.79. But that saucy pork goodness is here for a limited time.
What do you think? You guys want to do a golf trip instead, maybe?
That's kind of nature-y, right?
Yeah. No.
The simple joy of big news. Price and participation may vary for a limited time.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
Welcome back inside the Playbook on a Tuesday. Just a little college football news to fill you in on as well. I don't know if you've heard this or not. We've talked about it here. In fact, we broke this on Go Local Prov, actually probably about a month or two ago. But the Big East is going to do its expanding. Tomorrow apparently is the day that they're going to invite Boise State and San Diego State amongst the new teams into the Big East. Yep, that's right. They're going to create a Western Division. Silly as it sounds. They're also going to bring in TCU, SMU, Houston. No, not TCU, sorry. SMU, Houston, and UCF, Central Florida, are also coming in. Air Force, maybe. Navy, looks like, is also coming into the league. And then if Air Force decides not to do it for whatever reason, then it looks like Temple would get the nod there in all sports. So the Big East is not only going to improve itself, I think, football-wise over what it was this year, it's expanding and even going westward. As I think we all know, in collegiate conferences nowadays, it's not about geography. It hasn't been about geography for several years now. It's all about television markets and how much revenue you can drive. That is what drives college football. And all of this reconfiguration within college football has nothing to do with geography or anything else. And because we have nothing to do with geography here in the East, I go out to the University of Arizona and say hello to my friend Derek. Hello, Derek.
Hey, Rook, how are you?
What's happening, pal?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. I like what you did there with the whole geography thing. I was like, I see where you're going with this.
You know, every once in a while, a blind squirrel does find a nut, right?
Hey, Kevin, okay, in the future, let's not go ahead and give Eric Scalvino any credit for anything he said, especially when he's not here, all right?
Why? What's up with that?
I'm just kidding. But you know, Eric and I, John, you know, Eric and I, we have to bust each other up every once in a while.
Yes, that's
how it is.
That's also very true. I do understand that. I do understand that.
So what are you? We made a lot of great points to open the show.
Tell me what you agree with and what you don't agree with then.
Not a whole lot I don't agree with. But you know, starting with what I do, I did see that tweet about about the spread.
Was that what it was? Was it really your tweet? It was your tweet?
No, it was not mine. Was not mine.
You retweeted it.
No, I didn't. Like, I can't find the origin of it.
Oh, okay.
I found like a couple people who have said something, but I don't think they originated it, but really it was eight of the last 10 teams with a 20-point spread, you know, haven't covered like the Patriots didn't, and
I don't believe people know that kind of stuff, because I mean everybody said, oh, the Patriots, they'll win easy, and I'm like 21 points. Yeah. I knew that, and I didn't even know the stat. I didn't even know that. And when I saw it, I said it had to be something like that. There's just no way that those teams cover.
I'm pretty sure out of those 10 teams, the Patriots were involved in like four of them. They were involved in a couple of those that didn't cover that, but
of course. Of course.
You know, that's just how it is. You know, it's hard to do. It's hard to win games by that wide of a margin.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, you know, I would talk to you about the college football stuff, but we'll have to keep that up or off air, because I don't want to get you into a rant, because we all know you could go off on that. So,
well, but, we'll save her when you come in studio then.
Yeah, that'll be the 29th this month. So I know you mentioned at the start of the show.
We're gonna mark it down on our calendars.
Yeah, you better come in. I'm coming up. Okay, we got to find something to debate on. We'll have to come in, and we'll have to figure. We'll have a good time.
Absolutely.
So, but getting to the nitpicks, because that's what everyone wants to talk about, and you know there were a lot of them. And starting with the defense, you know, he said BB said that you know he wasn't going to take the Colts lightly. My problem was at the beginning of the game, it seemed like they were experimenting with a bunch of different things. You know, then players at different positions, players getting time in. You know, where they normally wouldn't get any playing time, different defensive formations, and people had a bunch of, they want to get on tape for people to prepare for, and, you know, the coaches want to evaluate. That's fine. I mean, it didn't bother me at the beginning when the Colts were moving the ball, when they were doing these kind of, exotic things. Mm-hmm. But then, they got to their base and they buckled down, except when you get to the fourth quarter, which, I've already talked about, and I know a lot of people, it's obviously annoying. It was frustrating. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't worried about the game being in jeopardy. It was just the fact that they were playing this soft prevent kind of a defense, and they were still getting beat over the top. You know, I just could not believe that. The coverage has been so bad this year, and it's just been really frustrating.
Yeah. I think we're going to agree too much here. So, I may have to try to pick a fight with you, Derek. But
that's all right. Going to the offense, unless you want to add something to that. I mean, going to the offense, the other thing is it, Ian Logue, who's the webmaster of PassFans.com, he wrote something really interesting the other day, and I thought it was kind of curious. And, the Patriots have been getting to some really, really slow start.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can pull up what I saw here, in the last seven games, they've only managed to put up 17 points and scored just one touchdown in the first quarter. And when you're doing that, the offense is good enough to where, they get, oiled up and they get in gear and it gets going. I mean, the offense is fine. But, it's like they start slow. And my other thing is, it's like the no huddle, they've been using it kind of as like a safety net. Okay, the offense isn't working. Now we got to go no huddle. We're not seeing these long, methodical drives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that bothers me. I don't know how you feel about it. But.
Well, yeah, part of it. Honestly, I haven't really paid a lot of attention to nitpicking on the offense, because the offense is really what this team has going for it. Would I like to see this team, run the ball a little bit more? Yeah, probably. I'd like to see this team.
You want to see them get more than 3 yards to carry against the 31st, rushing defense.
There's no doubt about that. As long as we're going to, jump into this little nitpicking part here, part of the reason why I was watching so closely Green Bay and New Orleans play, because I do see that if the Patriots somehow survive the AFC, one of those two teams is certainly going to win the NFC, barring a major upset, because the two offenses on those two sides are bar none, by far and away, superior to anything else in the NFC. The only other team, personnel-wise, I think that could match would be Dallas. And I think Dallas is just too stupid. Can you believe Jason Garrett icing his own kicker? Holy crap.
You You should have seen the bar, because, you know, I'm out here, obviously, in Arizona, watching the game, and we're down at the, we're down at this bar called Red Line, and I'm watching the game. I'm watching the Patriots game, and that game ends, and then the afternoon games, and I've told you a couple of times, my roommate's a Packers fan, so we're watching the Packers-Giants game, and then the Cowboys-Cardinals game going on. The bar was just going crazy.
I'm sure.
You know, it was a good time, but, you know, Dallas can't get out of its own way. And I think Green Bay has its flaws, too, because I watch a lot of Green Bay games, and they have their flaws, but they're really, really, you know, they're really a great team. I mean, they're so talented and, you know, really deep. And, you know, obviously New Orleans is a really good team, too. So if the Patriots do match one of, you know, meet one of those teams somehow in the playoffs, you know, or, you know, in the Super Bowl, really, you know, that would be, it would be a tough game. Now, going back to it, I think the Patriots can win, you know, a playoff game. I do.
I do, too. I do, too.
In terms of, there's a lot of matchups, and it's falling in the way of, if the Patriots want it, I think if the Patriots can reach their potential, some of the potential they've shown, I think if they can reach that potential and they play well, you know, I think there's a lot going for them. If they can get healthy, obviously injuries are part of it. But like you said, injuries aren't all of it. I mean, there's just a lot of bad personnel decisions being made, you know, and you have to look at Belichick for that.
Somebody has to be held accountable for that. There's no question.
Yeah. Especially, you know, when we go back to Taylor Price, which we talked about last week, and, you know, I know you weren't a big fan of Taylor Price, but that's a third-round pick that's just gone now.
I understand that. And I don't understand why. I mean, if you're going to – I mean, I really don't understand why you're letting a third-round pick go like that. That tells me then Rasai Dowling better be ready to produce early, and he'd better stay healthy, because otherwise
he played well for when he was on the field.
But he can't stay on the field. And apparently Taylor Price, that was part of the problem. Apparently part of the problem. He couldn't stay on the field for when the team wanted him or needed him or whatever the case may be. So if you're going to hold one player to that standard, you have to hold everybody to that standard. So
now it's
going to be, all right, what have you done for me lately? Regardless of injury, what have you done for me lately? If you haven't produced, you're out. And that seems to be the way.
That's how it is.
That's how this team is going. That's how this team is headed.
Yep. No question there. And, you know, when you look at it, it's funny because 2 years ago we take Price in the third round, you know, from Ohio. And then, you know, Tequan Underwood was taken by the Jaguars in the seventh round. Well, now Price goes to the Jaguars, and Underwood is
with the Patriots.
Here.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny just how that works. I mean, I don't know. I'm a full believer that when a player goes to one team, he might have a different career with another team, depending on how he starts his career, just how it evolves. That's just kind of my opinion. You know, but I understand that receiver is a touchy, you know, position. You know, Belichick touched on it, but it bothers me when you're looking ahead to, you know, receiver and defensive back, two positions that he's really struggled with drafting. You know, they're hard. The draft is a crapshoot, but you still have to be held accountable, especially when you're going after value and all those things. And my biggest thing is his second and third round picks, because when you put an emphasis on middle round picks like he does, continuously trading down in the first round to acquire them,
right,
you better hit on some picks. And you're looking at, you know, so many picks that they're digging at the bottom of the barrel to make up for those misses. Darius Butler, Sebastian Vollmer, obviously, he's just dealing with this injury right now. He's played pretty well. You know, obviously Gronkowski's ahead, but there are a lot of other players. You know, Wheatley and Price is now gone, and I mean, you could go on and on for a long time. I'm not going to get into all of them.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating, and now you're seeing that when you miss on these draft picks, where this team's emphasizing on these middle rounds. And what they have to do, and that's what we see Matthew Slater in the safety position, like you saw, like you mentioned earlier. So, I don't know. I mean, I still think this team has talent, probably just not as much as they should. And but you know, it was a frustrating game. You know, luckily, they have four easier games left. But they are getting they do look harder by the day. You know, they do look harder by Denver's playing well. And, you know, obviously the Dolphins have played well, and I'm excited to go to that game for sure. But
definitely.
Anyway, I'll let someone else go ahead and rant for a couple minutes. But it was good talking to you, Rook, and I'll see you at the end of the month.
It's all good, Derek. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that. Derek, University of Arizona. 508-298-0398 if you want to jump in. Where are the complaints? Where are the nitpicks today? Is it just me? Or is everybody, you know, fat and sassy over this thing? I really expected there'd be a little bit more, you know, unease, to say the least, today. But, you know, just a real trickle of emails, and doesn't seem to me that anybody cares. I'm a little disappointed. I'm more than a little surprised. This one comes from Mike. Mike in East Haven, Mikey Vandalism, our friend Mikey Vandalism in East Haven, Connecticut. So virtually the Patriots traded their 2010 third-round pick and Taylor Price for Jacksonville's seventh-round pick and Tyquan Underwood, which is what Derek just mentioned. Makes sense, right? Looking at Bills drafting lately, stockpiling picks and trading out and missing on premier talent may not be the way to go if we keep selecting busts. Look at the past 5 years with the top selections. The result is ridiculous. All right, so Mikey is going to let us know. 06, first-round Lawrence Maroney cut. Second-round Chad Jackson cut. Third-round David Thomas traded. 2007, first-round Brandon Merriweather cut. 2008, Gerard Mayo. Jury's out, he says. I don't think so. I think he turned out to be a hit, not a cut, not a miss. Second-round Terrence Wheatley cut. Third-round Sean Crable cut. Third-round Kevin O'Connell cut. 2009, first traded out, twice passing on guys like Michael Orr, Vontae Davis, Clay Matthews, Hakeem Nicks, Kenny Britt. But in the second round, Pat Chung. Okay, that's a good one. Second round, Ron Brace. Injured. Haven't seen much, but yet he manages to stick around. And some don't. Second round, Darius Butler. Cut. Second round, Sebastian Vollmer. Solid, although he's oft injured. Third round, Brandon Tate. Cut. By the way, Mike Wallace was taking a pick later, he points out. 2010, Devin McCourty, first round. Second round, Jermaine Cunningham, has never seen the field this year anyway. Wow. Second round, Brandon Spikes. And then third round, Taylor Price, cut. 2011, well, yeah, he left out Rozai Dowling. He says, the point is, while we have gotten a few solid players, we have missed more than we've hit. With top picks that we keep trading out in a way, we should be making the picks instead of giving them away, while in the meantime passing on premier talent. The development of youthful players is stagnant in New England, and it needs to change. Now, Mikey does bring up some good points. Patriots are trading down because they feel like there's better value later in the latter rounds, but the problem is that they've missed on this better value. So really, what is the better value? A cheap guy that you're going to end up cutting? Or that first-round pick that you know is going to be a stud. They apparently don't have as high an opinion on some of the first- or second-rounders as you or I, rather to trade down. Not only save a couple of bucks, but they feel like they can find some players there. They've done that in the past, but they have missed more than they have hit of late. And this is just sort of a part of the problem that you're finding with the Patriots on defense right now. Mikey says, my question to you and the listeners, do you feel the Patriots have been successful with their evaluations of the draft in the past 5 years? Why or why not? Well, Mikey, my answer is very simple. Overwhelmingly, as I think you've kind of already pointed out with your very thorough email, the answer is no. On the surface, no. But I would also tell you it's no with the caveat, with an asterisk, because they have hit on some guys that we had no clue or no knowledge about that these guys, you know, considered and had on their quote-unquote board for some time. Some of the free agents that have come through that they've hit on, some of the street free agents that they've even signed and come through in a pinch in a quote-unquote Patriot way.
Just an unrelated little bit of news to pass along here, John. Many people, we've had many callers and emailers write in today, as today is the day to find out whether that Denver-New England game is going to be flexed.
Oh, that's right.
And usually it comes out sometime around lunchtime, and mm-hmm. we get a press release from Stacy.
Right.
But there are a bunch of members of the media tweeting that CBS, NBC, and the NFL are still doing a mediated talk to try to figure this out because there's major ratings and financial implications. So we still do not know yet, but we should know by the end of business
today. Well, if NBC can placate, I would guess it, in this case it would be Fox. No, it'd be CBS. It'd be CBS because it's the Patriots on the road and then the AFC contract is president on the road against an NFC team. No, that's right, CBS. Yeah, what am I saying? Denver, AFC, duh.
Yeah,
so it'd be CBS.
So the three of them are just sort of at the bargaining table.
Well,
trying to figure out what's
going to
get done.
Why would Fox be in on this, though? Because,
did I say Fox?
Yeah.
My mistake.
Has to be an NBC-CBS battle.
NBC-CBS, and then the NFL is also getting involved in this kind of mediating what's going on here.
Right, so that game is, I mean, certainly a prime candidate to be flexed and to be the Sunday night game in 2 weeks.
It is currently set for
4:15.
The current Sunday night game for that week is now is Baltimore at San Diego.
Oh, see, so, that's going to – that goodbye. Yeah. That's gone. So, I mean, I think it's just a matter of time, but I think what it is CBS needs some cash. They need some cash on the barrelhead from the Peacock Network.
Yeah, most of the tweets that I'm seeing here, John, are along the lines of CBS is not giving up this game without a fight.
And frankly, I don't blame them. Why should they?
So that's why
this would be the one game I think that people would really galvanize, and could bring in some big time numbers, not only because of the Patriots' success, because of Tebow.
Yeah, so that's why you're seeing this decision get kind of drawn out here.
Right. Absolutely. So because of that, my guess would be that that game will be a prime candidate for flexing at some point in time in a couple of weeks. So I think that's probably what we're looking at. Sam in Glendora, California says, releasing Price without giving him an opportunity is just wrong. I hate to see a potentially good player getting cut and then playing for another team. I'm trying to see who will pick him up and maybe come back and be a nightmare for us. Well, Jacksonville picked him up already. So the Jags have Taylor Price now. The reasons giving for the release does not sit well with me. The New England Patriots released disappointing wide receiver Taylor Price on Saturday, according to the Boston Globe. What kind of crackerjack colossal BS is that? How would you know someone is disappointing when you don't even give him enough time to prove himself? I was going to send a funny message about Tim Tebow, but the news made me so mad I had to reply. I'll send the Tebow one later on in the show. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate that. All right. Yeah, he's with Jacksonville now, so that's really kind of where we stand on it. All right, here's Eldridge in North Carolina. Eldridge, welcome back to the playbook.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
I'm feeling like the rest of the fans because Cutting Taylor Price, I know he's young, been there, 2 years, going on three. But, man, you know, he's been hurt, two of those years. But you're giving Chad Ochocinco $6 million to play. He gets screamed out yesterday in the game and get yanked when he throws his hands up. But you won't give this young guy a chance to play. I don't think that's, you know, that's right whatsoever. I think Bill need to get off the evaluation. Let somebody else come in as GM and pick the players. Because, like I said, we had two number ones, two number twos, two number threes this year. Okay? You could have got Peterson out of Cardinals, cornerback, passed on him. Could have got A.J. Green from the Cincinnati Bengals, passed on him. And what we got? You know, you got Vereen, Ridley. They're doing pretty good, but they just start. But before we got Vereen, you had a chance to get DeMarco Murray.
Mm-hmm.
Passed on him. All three of them guys is young and proven. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Even Jacksonville had a young receiver, San Diego last night. Played a couple times. They put him in there. Two touchdowns, Brown. I don't get it. The Patriots don't believe in putting the players on the field, letting them develop, or they just want to see how good they do in practice. I really am lost on this concept.
Well,
can you help me out on it?
Well, I'm not sure that I can, Eldridge, but let me give you a what I think would be a plausible scenario here as to why maybe the Patriots made the decision they did on Taylor Price. I think, you know, while it certainly doesn't seem to make much sense keeping a $6 million guy, if you will, over Chad Ochocinco as opposed to Price, I can only tell you that I believe that this has to at least be a part of the process. I'm not saying it's entirely the process, but part of it has to do with the fact that there is a previous relationship between Belichick and Ochocinco, as I'm sure most fans are aware. I think they also felt like that Taylor Price had his opportunities in practices, again, which we're only able to see just a little bit of. So we don't know to what extent, but apparently there was some extent. Obviously, Jacksonville picked him up fairly quickly, so that does sort of ring some alarm bells. It should.
He got speed, you know. He was given a chance.
And yeah.
$6 million. I know. Bill and Chad got a relationship. I've seen that when he played for Cincinnati. You know, I noticed that when he played for Cincinnati. But man. Sometimes relationship just ain't working.
I'm not doubting that at all, and I tend to agree with that sentiment. All I'm giving you is what I think is just a semi-educated opinion, not based on any fact, an opinion as to why they made the call. The call was made because they felt like in the long run, Chad Ochocinco was more likely to be able to make plays and be where he needed to be on the field than Taylor Price. That's all I can tell you.
I know. I haven't seen it. you know, open.
Well, I haven't seen it either. We haven't seen him on the field, but there's a reason why we haven't seen him on the field, because apparently in practice, Taylor Price was not doing what the Patriots wanted him to do. There's no other plausible explanation for that. That's why we never saw him in a game. Now, we've seen Chad Ochocinco because, at the very least, he is a veteran. He has been through the ringer, so to speak, maybe a little bit too much. But Tom Brady has more confidence in Chad Ochocinco than Taylor Price. That's what it boils down to. And that's why Taylor Price is gone, period.
Well, like I said, we got, what, two number ones this year? And, what, two number twos? Or is it two number threes? And I agree with the first caller. Trade it down, you ain't getting no value. Mm-hmm. You know, chance to get him, go get him. I don't know what this draft looked like, but last year was the best draft I've seen, I think. Because you see all the guys that everybody's drafted, defense or offense-wise, they performed. Everybody except our guys.
Yeah, I know.
Ray J. Dolan, out. You know. Gronk, he wasn't there for this year. But Gronk and Hernandez are about the best two draft picks. Belichick don't pick them, if you ask me.
Right.
McCourty, I don't know what happened to McCourty. Yeah, I do. Merriweather ain't there no more. So I think Merriweather was covering for him, and he played a little bit better. He had a little help back there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no. So safety-wise, you know, should have cut Brown and James Hedebo, whatever his name is.
Well, I don't think Hedebo's been a problem. I really don't. I mean, I realize he's a local kid. You know.
I've even come around.
I know, but I don't think Hedebo's been a problem. The one problem that I have at safety is really James Sanders. That's a major problem I think that I have and a lot of people have. I have a problem with Lee Bodden, but you know, I understand why the deal was made. But I mean, okay, so you know, he doesn't want to accept his role. Well, make him. What is he going to do? Was he really going to be that bad an influence in the locker room? I mean, to me, that made no sense, because that kills you at the weakest position you have on the entire football field.
Well, I think
he's under contract. He's got to play. He's got a contract.
I think Bodden was a waste in the beginning anyway, to be honest with you. I don't think he was that good of a cover. He couldn't cover guys as fast and a little bit bigger.
Well, Eldridge, I would agree with you, because the Patriots apparently felt likewise. That's why they asked him to accept the corner, you know, the nickel role, if you will, the permanent nickel role, the extra cornerback role, and he felt like he was his starter. And so rather than let this manifest itself into a potential problem, they decided, okay, you know what, we'll just give you a release. And that's and they came to an agreement like that.
Oh, well, I'm glad they gave him a release, but I think that Jones guy play so-so. I think Molden is coming on. So,
well, Antoine Molden hasn't played poorly, and Antoine Molden came with a lot of baggage because, you know, he was really hyped when he was at Houston. And then, you know, he fell flat in Houston, so, you know, the thought was, well, why are we picking up one of the Texans' busts? And he's done okay. I wouldn't say he's been outstanding, but he's done okay, and he seems to be warming up to it. And maybe, I would only say that maybe that, you know, knowing that he's gotten a second chance with a franchise like New England, maybe this has helped jumpstart him a little bit.
Yeah, but McCourty, I guess he was still hurt, but even when he wasn't hurt, he's lost out there, man. Might be that second year jinx, sophomore jinx that I was talking about, but to me, he's lost out there.
I would tell you that guys that are generally hurt tend to play tentatively anyway. And so I think Devin McCourty has been hurt probably longer and or more often than we even know about this year. I think that would probably, to me, that makes perfect sense as to why he's been so soft and so tentative sometimes in coverage. Honestly.
All right.
Honestly.
All right.
It's kind of like the whole thing with Brady early in the year. We saw him wearing, you know, the little thing on his elbow for a while and all that kind of stuff. Brady was hurt, too. He's banged up, but nobody was talking about it.
Yeah,
you know?
One more question.
Yeah.
One more question.
Yeah.
Do you see anywhere in the future, or maybe if anywhere present, that when it comes to playoff time, this team will get a receiver that will step up besides Wilson?
No. Not this year, no.
It's going to be small ball, and we might be one and done again, because that's what I'm feeling.
No, I don't think so. I mean, first of all, you know, you got to remember, they really have more than just Welker at receiver, all right? You know, Deion Branch and Tom Brady are, you know, they're on the same page. Aaron Hernandez is virtually a wide receiver anyway in the way that they use him. So you've got a big receiver out there, in effect, in Aaron Hernandez, even though he's called a tight end. Rob Gronkowski right now is the best tight end in the NFL. And you've got backs that can catch the ball. So I don't really think that that's a problem. I'll be honest with you. I just don't see it as a problem, the receiver spot right now. Would it be great to have somebody who could stretch the field? Sure, it would be great.
We got about to stretch the field.
But
feel like they're gonna do last like they did last year. They're gonna shut their little short stuff down, and we're gonna be hurt again.
Well, that might be the case if teams decide they want to put eight in the box and dare you to go over the top. You know, that might be the case. But I think the Patriots, looking at it from their perspective, I think they feel like they can beat you over the top with a guy like Hernandez.
Yeah, one more thing, and then I'm going to let you go. Okay.
Go.
I saw the Football Life when they did Belichick.
Yeah.
And that sucky year when they had Moss, and I heard him in the conference. We was in the conference with his coaches.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's getting tired of where they should cut double Moss and cut Watcher down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he don't want to do that the most. He's going to go somewhere else. The next thing you know, Moss get traded the following year. I think this coming back to hunt him. Because we got nobody to stretch. Or nobody that the defense is afraid of.
Yeah.
At least give some respect to.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? That could very well be. I mean, again, time is going to tell after this season is over. It'd be interesting to see also how they might decide to go draft-wise and or free agent-wise at the end of next year or at the end of this season to get themselves ready for next year, though. I would imagine they'll probably try to address it in some form or fashion. Eldridge, thanks for the call. Let's get Big Al in here. Big Al, thanks for waiting. You're in the playbook.
Hey, John Rugg with that.
How's it going?
Okay. You know, I called earlier, and I'm trying to calm down a little bit after this past Sunday. You know, it's just as you can guess, John, by the fourth quarter, based upon prior calls and conversations we've had, you know, early in the season, I really wasn't so that upset with the defense down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
As I was upset with our offense choosing to burn off only 36 seconds of the clock with 7 minutes and 11 seconds to go after we had an interception.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's not helping the defense much. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the defense, made interception, turnover, we got you the ball. Oh, gee, thanks, here's your reward. 36 seconds later, we're going to punt. That's not the way to run the clock out at the end of the game. But I've given up, John. I've been griping about this all year. We don't manage the clock down the stretch, and it is what it is. Okay. I don't know what to do to stop it, but that's how it is in a lot of places, not just the Patriots. But, there's two things, and you touched on it in your show. There's only really I'm usually a glass half full kind of guy with the Patriots. Very little about the Patriots makes me upset. My glass of Pawtucket Patriot is usually half full, okay? But two things get my goat about the Patriots. Bad clock management, which happened Sunday in the last 7 minutes, and keeps happening for reasons that, again, I don't understand.
Yeah, it was not good.
And the other thing...
It was not good. I will definitely give you that. It was definitely not good and very un-Brady-like, if you will.
I don't understand why we're running the spread offense, hurry up, with 7 minutes and 11 seconds to go. We got a 3-touchdown lead. I don't get that. And I'm afraid that if you can explain that to me, then you can explain how to split the atom, okay? Because there's no way to explain that.
Yeah.
Why we, with a 3-touchdown lead, we're spreading the field and whipping the ball around like it's the second quarter and we're up 3.
Sure, sure.
You know,
right.
I don't get it. But anyway, I digress.
It's all right.
The other thing,
you're
the
allowed.
Other thing, this is like, this is the combined effect of these two things. That the only two things, really, that have upset me about the whole Patriot way since 2004 has been the inability to manage the clock, which we've discussed over and over again. I'm not going to do that again. But the other thing is the unwillingness to draft a linebacker. It has just been mind-boggling to me. We brought in all these retreads and squeezed every nickel out of Junior Seau. And, you know, in recent years, we've gotten a little better. We drafted Mayo. That worked out pretty good. I still like Spikes. I guess Cunningham is not, you know, working out. But at least we've tried in recent years to draft a couple of linebackers. But do you happen to know, John, who the AFC Defensive Player of the Month was for November?
AFC Defensive Player of the Month?
Uh-huh.
No.
A guy by the name of Connor Barwin, linebacker,
okay.
Houston Texan.
Right. Former AFC tight end, University of Cincinnati. Yes, I'm familiar with him.
There you go. Of the month, not of the week, of the month.
Okay.
Okay.
So
we had a chance to draft him, you know, but we took Darius Butler instead because we needed to acquire our 3,000th defensive back for that year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, it isn't like Connor Barwin hasn't worked out. He's worked out pretty well. And you could say, well, he's just living off of the jet stream of Mario Williams. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Mario Williams is hurt and out for the year. Okay. So he's doing pretty well, pretty much all by himself. Okay. But we couldn't draft him. We had to, you know, bat draft Darius Butler instead. And, you know, that's disappointing to see that this guy. He's just named AFC Defensive Player of the Month. And we decide, with 7 minutes and 11 seconds to go, to spread the field and whip the ball around three times, you know, three passes for 36 seconds, and then we throw the defense back on there. Those two things combined, yes, to kind of chap my butt this week.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No.
I try to be a little more cheerful.
No.
John, you know that.
It's quite all right. It's understood. That's why we're here. We're here to help you heal. Come on, Al. You know better than that. We're here to help you heal, my friend.
Thank you. Heal me. I need all the help I can get.
We all do. We all do. We got a 9
no,
and 3. We got a 9-3 football team, and we've all got agita. So, you know, what can I tell
it.
You?
I know. I get the number 1 seed right now if the season ended
that's right.
today. As
that's
the
right.
thing goes.
Absolutely. We said that
we'd
to open
be
the show.
Number 1 seed.
Yeah, we that's
here
absolutely
I am
right.
bitching like it's, you know, like it we're out of the playoffs.
Right.
But anyways, this Tebow thing is going to be tremendous. And it will be, you're the network guy, you're the TV guy, John. Media. Tell me, what do you predict? What is going to be the behind-the-scenes machinations of the movement of this game
well,
between now and 2 weeks from now?
You know, well, first of all, as we said earlier, CBS and NBC are fighting over it right now, and so the NFL has
okay.
to come in and mediate because CBS okay. doesn't want to give it up because they see bonanza ratings. NBC,
sure.
obviously, because they have the Sunday night package, that they're the whole reason for them getting back into football is they wanted to have the ability to flex good games into the primetime spot, and they're paying a lot of money to the NFL in terms of rights fees in order to have that. Well, the CBS doesn't like that. They don't want it to go to an opposing network. Usually, there is some sort of exchange of money and or favors given, certainly not of the sexual variety, I don't think, but at any rate, there's usually, you know, you scratch our back this time, we'll scratch yours the next
right.
time. That's usually
right.
how it goes. Now I'm not so sure. Now I think you see, because of the attractiveness of the football game, I think you're probably seeing what CBS is kind of like, well, no, we don't want to give this up. 4:15 p.m., you know, we have a national audience coming up, and, you know, we think we should be able to hold on to one of these, while NBC is saying, well, this is the whole reason for the flex to begin with. So the NFL is going to have to mediate it. My guess is that it flexes. It will be in the prime time. It will be on NBC. Simply because it's in the NFL's best interest to have it where the entire country can see it in that time slot. Now, if CBS keeps the game, I can assure you that NBC will be taken care of in some form or fashion, will definitely be
right.
taken care of, number one.
Right.
And CBS will probably absolutely clean up monetarily on it.
Let me ask you this, John. Is there a limit on the number of flexes per season that NBC gets? Do you know?
No, I don't believe so. I think any game, you know, as of the, what is it, I think week 13 or whatever it is. No, not week 13, or whatever it is. After week 10, I guess it is.
Oh,
I'm remembering
okay.
correctly.
So
any
they're
game,
locked in through week 10.
Yes, and then once you get to a certain point in the season, because obviously, you know, schedules that are made out, you know, in April, you
right.
don't know how teams' fortunes are going to go. This is how the whole flex program began a few years ago. So the NFL, for the primetime games, they have the option now of, you know, flexing a dog game out and bringing in a good game in, you know, depending upon how the teams are playing.
Well, the Colts and Patriots game got moved from 4 o'clock to 1 o'clock.
No, the Colts and Patriots were actually the Sunday night game originally.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It was originally a night game, and they flexed it out because nobody gave a rat's you-know-what about an 0-11 team.
Well, sure. So, I thought it had originally been a 4 o'clock.
No, I think very first it was the 8, and then it moved to 4, and then it got flexed all the way back to 1 o'clock,
oh,
which is great.
So it was like a double move.
Yeah.
It was a double flex.
I believe so.
It's like a Dion Branch. You know, we did like an out and up and then another out or something.
Something, that's right.
We got it to 1 o'clock.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, well, good deal. But well, you know, I'm telling you, Tim Tebow is what, the highest-selling jersey in the country? He's on the cover of the first magazine that the NFL Network has ever produced. They've got their own I mean, they are competing with ESPN. It looks like the NFL Network is going after ESPN. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're doing everything ESPN's doing.
Yeah,
you know, with the NFL.
Yep, I
and
agree.
The ESPN has had this ESPN the magazine for years, and now it's going to be NFL Network the magazine. And guess who's on the first cover? Tim Tebow. So sure, I guess I'd like to have Tebow and Brady to hype that one up.
Of course you would. Guy, you know, guy's 6-1 as a starter. You know, he's withstood all of the criticism. His numbers don't jump out at you. The guy just wins. You know, so frankly, I understand why there's the fascination with him. I totally get it, and I think television should be able to play it up as best as they want to because, frankly, they've paid for it.
Absolutely.
That's why they're in the business of doing what they're doing. And if the NFL is smart, they'll probably put it in primetime.
I'm sure they will. The NFL, like you say, will be kind of the mediator over this thing. But somebody's going to get paid. If CBS loses that game, they will get
They will have to be paid handsomely, yeah. With something, with extra games or with money or with, I don't know, hookers. I don't know. They'll get paid with something.
Well, John, thanks for taking me off of the ledge.
No problem.
I really appreciate it.
Good
you know, you really ought to get like a master's in social work or something, you know, in addition to broadcasting.
Just call me Dr. J. That's all you got to do. Dr. J.
You're a great American. Have a great day.
Way to go, Al. Thanks. Yep, call me Dr. J. Kev, we want to sneak in a break? 508-298-0398 here in the playbook.
Dear business traveler, high in the sky, it's for important work that you do fly. But on JetBlue, we've made your job more fun, with free DirecTV to play when your tasks are done. And with 40-plus nonstop straight from Boston, you won't have layovers to cities like Austin. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Luana, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand by flying JetBlue for business. Book now at JetBlue.com/business. DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
Hey, Tom, what's on your holiday wish list?
Joy and happiness to all.
Oh, because I was thinking of giving you packaged coffee from Dunkin' Donuts.
Ooh, that's better.
Nothing beats Dunkin's packaged coffee. Right now, buy 3 pounds and get a fourth free. Only at Dunkin' Donuts restaurants. So give America's favorite coffee as a gift or stock up yourself. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Happy holidays, everyone! Glad you could make it to the house! Who's up for some Dunkin' coffee?
Yeah.
Grandma, let's start with you!
Hazelnut, please!
Cousin Mark?
Original blend!
Vanessa?
Your holidays are covered with Dunkin' coffee. Buy it by the pound or try our new Dunkin' K-Cup packs. Only at Dunkin' stores. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Bank of America, the official bank of the New England Patriots.
Copyright 2011, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Visitor Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never-been-owned-before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Droid. Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Verizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
All right, guys, ready for 2 weeks in the wild or what?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, then strap on those backpacks.
Hey, let me just check this text.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, no.
What?
Not now.
What is it?
McRib is back.
What?
We're gonna miss it.
This backpack just got really heavy, guys.
Everybody back in the car. We are going to McDonald's.
Yeah, good.
McRib is back for just $2.79. But that saucy pork goodness is here for a limited time.
So what do you think? You guys want to do a golf trip instead, maybe?
That's kind of nature, right? Right.
No.
The simple joy of big news. Price and participation may vary for a limited time.
This is Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio. Want to get inside the playbook? Call John on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Back inside the playbook here on a Tuesday, a Nitpick Tuesday. Still waiting for some more nitpicks to come in. It's been a little slow today, kids, I have to admit. Honestly, what's kept you? I really thought you'd be just gangbusters over the fourth quarter collapse, but hasn't quite been that way. The email inbox, webradio@patriots.com. So I'll have a few that I want to share with you here in a moment, but here's some of the story behind the story. Denver Post is reporting on the flexing possibility of the Patriots and the Broncos game in 2 weeks. NFL and NBC want to switch the December 18 game to the Sunday night broadcast at 6:20 Mountain Time, 8:20 Eastern. Kickoff is currently scheduled for 2:15 Mountain, which is 4:15 Eastern. But NBC, of course, wants to show the game in favor of a Baltimore-San Diego matchup that had been previously scheduled that night. NBC's contract with the NFL gives the partners a flex schedule to switch to a more compelling game than the one originally scheduled for prime time. CBS has the game in the afternoon slot. They've been fighting the move, and apparently so has Patriot owner Robert Kraft, has been fighting the move. Now you might ask, why would Mr. Kraft fight the move? I don't know. Doesn't want to stay up until 12 midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning to watch a Sunday night game? I could probably put myself in that category too. But you have to look a little bit further and realize who some of Mr. Kraft's business partners are, and it does include CBS Viacom. And Viacom being a spinoff of CBS, I think he's going to bat for his business partner. So that's why Mr. Kraft apparently has a stake in this. So, you know, as I said a couple of moments ago, maybe, I think we'll see this game on NBC. Now I'm not so certain. Now I'm not entirely certain. But whichever network ends up getting the game, Broncos have won 5 in a row going into this week. Obviously, Tebow, Brady, you know, it's a compelling story, especially for, you know, December, pre-holiday, teams that are, you know, in contention or thinking playoffs, and teams out of contention could care less. And, you know, this is good because, quite frankly, it doesn't seem to be a lot of compelling football, at least for us, over the course of the last month of the regular season. Ratings should be huge. If the move is made, it'll be the third primetime game for the Broncos this season. Denver played Oakland, Monday Night Football to open the year. Jets on Thursday night, November 17. So they're all for it in Denver, but Mr. Kraft apparently not exactly going for it. So we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. Pat Fat says this about Denver. He says, I know they didn't look as good last week, but don't sleep on Denver's defense. You know, I would tend to agree with that. You know, there's quietly a reason why Denver's been able to stay in football games. And some of that has to do with the fact that their defense has helped keep them in games. So while I think most everybody as recently as a week ago would have to say that, you know, all right, the Patriots should have at least a better than even opportunity at getting a win on the road in Denver, in all honesty, I don't think we can any longer count that as an automatic W if some of you were trying to do that. There's just something about, you know, momentum and chemistry and mystique and ability. When you kind of put it all in that big football pot and you stir it around, it's coming out smelling pretty good in Denver right now. So I certainly give the Broncos more than just a puncher's chance here. In fact, a lot more than a puncher's chance. And I think that's something that you'll have to consider as a fan. That this team is going to have up against. Now, I wrote this in my Go Local Prof column this last week. I said, you know, I can't personally wait for Tim Tebow to get his first meeting with Vince Wilfork. So when he thinks about, you know, jumping up and throwing one of those jump passes from the line of scrimmage or, you know, taking the ball in an option keeper up the middle and he sees, you know, Vince Wilfork and Kyle Love and some of the other guys that play tackle, Gerard Warren in there, I frankly think that, you know, that is a matchup that I would tend to favor for the Patriots. But, you know, nothing phases Tebow, and I think that really sort of endears us all to him. Here's a guy that has absolutely thrown caution to the wind, has no fear. I know he's even an ultra-religious type of guy. You know, and I think a lot of people admire him for him taking the stance that he does. In a lot of ways. And the fact is that, no, he's not a polished NFL quarterback. He's got a lot of work to do. Yes, his technique is, you know, iffy at best. He has rightfully come under criticism for a lot of the things that are wrong, but the guy's winning. And he's got his teammates believing behind him. And frankly, in football, in an emotional game like football, that's all you need. That's all you need. That's half the battle. The will to win, the belief that you can win is half the battle. And then the physical aspect of it comes through the other half. But the mental aspect is a huge, huge factor. You cannot underrate it. 2 weeks, we're a week away from even really talking about it, and here we are already talking about it. Don't take this the wrong way if you're a Redskins fan. Please, don't take this the wrong way if you're a Redskins fan. Jim in Walpole says, Rook, would Paul Posluszny have helped this team? He looked sort of Brewski-like last night on Monday Night Football, mostly because he's a white linebacker, but also because he made some very athletic tackles. Did the Pats show any interest in him during the last offseason? You know, I kind of wonder the same thing, Jim, because I liked Posluszny when he was at Penn State. I thought he was actually a pretty active linebacker. Had a nose for the ball, like a lot of Penn State linebackers normally do. Are able to get in and mix it up. And it was just another one of the whole guys in that whole linebacker you thing, mystique that had going on for so many years. I'm not sure why they didn't really have any interest in him. There might have been some fleeting interest. But I think a lot of it probably had to do with the fact that he remembered a couple of years ago he had a major knee injury. And so because he had a major knee injury, I think that probably cooled on a lot of people. Now, good for Paul that he's been able to come back and have the kind of performance that he's had. But, you know, Patriots, I mean, he plays a similar position, you know, that the Patriots already have stocked with Gerard Mayo and Gary Guyton, you know, right in the middle. Probably with that knee injury, he doesn't really have the ability to hit the corners or play an outside backer. He's an inside linebacker. Unless you're going to play a lot of 3-4, which the Patriots, as we know, have not this year, Posluszny doesn't really fit. Jim also says, on the bright side, number 23, Nate Jones, looked pretty good. Yeah, you know what? I was going to say the same thing. For a guy that, you know, he's had quite a bit of experience, and Coach Belichick did talk about it in his post-game and also in his Monday deal. But I actually thought Jones looked so well. I mean, the fact is that we didn't talk about it. We didn't even notice him out there. And to me, that's a great sign. That's the sign of your ability to go in and do your job. You don't notice the guy. you don't get thrown over the top on. You might not make any spectacular stops, but you're going out there and you're defending enough to where balls are overthrown or balls are underthrown, or you're doing your job of covering. Now, Jones did let, I believe, one potential interception slip through his hands, but I'd be willing to kind of chalk that one off to just rust more than anything else. But he didn't look bad. He didn't look bad. So maybe that's one of these, you know, free agent guys that the Patriots actually, you know, strike gold on through no real purpose of their own. We know the busts have been there. But, you know, every once in a while, you're going to throw something against the wall that's going to stick, right? Donaldo. Is that how we pronounce it? Donaldo. Wow, why is that so hard to say? From Nicaragua. Oh, my goodness. I don't even know if I want to read this. It says, yo, John, I'm close to the beach with a cold beer in hand. Life is good. Who is this guy? Close to the beach with a cold beer in hand. Donaldo in Nicaragua? Come on. Really? Really? Unless you're a player for the Patriots secondary, wow, that was atrocious. I almost cried at the fourth quarter, and I haven't cried since the game that we shall not mention. I just don't see how the Patriots can compete in the playoffs against the Steelers or Ravens with this D. It's softer than Carvel ice cream. Let's light a candle and say the Lord's Prayer for this D, John, or we'll be watching other teams and the Pats play in the later rounds of the playoffs. Well, Donaldo, have another swig of that cold beer. Life is still good. You have no worries, my friend. But I can't necessarily, you know, honestly, as much as I banged on the defense for giving up the 21 in the fourth quarter on the Colts, I still haven't reverted to how I felt about the defense, say, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, especially right before the bye week, where I actually thought that this team was going to have some problems come postseason. I don't think this is a very good defense. I think it is merely an adequate defense. I don't think this defense can stop Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees. I think they can slow them down. And the way that the Patriots will win games in the playoffs is, A, make a stop every so often and slow good quarterbacks down, and B, turn the other team over. That's what it's going to take. You must turn the other team over. Now, There's a real common thread in why the Patriots have managed to get 4 wins in a row again going on here. Fact is they haven't turned the ball over. They had one turnover against the Chiefs when Brady got strip sacked. And it was the Chiefs. But that's it. He hadn't thrown a pick. So he's reverted back to, I don't know, 2010 Brady form. Keep in mind, earlier in the year now, when we saw some of the un-Tom-like performances, that's when we were talking a lot about his elbow, right? We haven't seen that lately, and Tom's been throwing the ball better. He doesn't have the yips. So I don't know if, you know, his arm has just gotten better, if he's improved something with his technique, he's spotted something, he's going different. I have no idea. But there's something different. There's something better. The result is he's more accurate. So, taking care of the football and then forcing turnovers is going to be big. Turnover differential, the Patriots were +2 this week. Certainly one of the superlatives, the few, to come out of the game against the Colts. They were +2 this week, which means now they are, I believe, +8 on the season. Okay, that's not last year's numbers, which overwhelmed everybody in the NFL, and we all know how flat the team fell in the playoffs, so turnovers aren't everything. I get that. But they are fourth now in the NFL in turnover differential. So they're amongst the elite, of which Green Bay is up there as well. So they're moving in the right direction. You must create turnovers. You must not turn it over yourself. If you do that, you will have a chance to win any game you play in this 2011 universe of the National Football League in which you exist. It's that simple. That's the deal. Don't turn it over. Turn the other guy over. You're all good. All right. Tyler sends this on Facebook. This may be a better question. Thank you. There you go. Facebook. Is that the Facebook?
Hey, girl.
Thank you. This may be a better question for later in the week, given all the nitpicks I'm sure we're going to come into today. I haven't actually had that many, Tyler, but okay. But at the beginning of the season, it seemed like it was Super Bowl win or bust. A lot has happened since the beginning of the season with cuts, trades, expectations of players. With all of that now in mind, at what point of the postseason do the Patriots need to make it for you and the listeners to feel like this season was a success, given all that has happened? Of course, we all want a Super Bowl win, but if the team makes it to the Super Bowl and we lose, should we as fans still be okay? If the defense holds together long enough to get to the title game, can we say, well, they went further than they should have, or is it still championship or nothing? It's a great question. It's kind of a Zen question of the day, I think. I have to give that some thought. My initial inclination, Tyler, is that if the team makes it to the Super Bowl but falls short, that, frankly, the expectation should be that well, this team did pretty well. Although, I think because fans are largely spoiled in this area because of the three Super Bowls and the near miss to New York, that I think fans will largely be disappointed. But if you try to look at this on an even keel and try to put your Patriots bias away, did you really think this was a Super Bowl team before the year started? You have to be honest with yourself. I did not. I thought it had the potential to be. But at the start of the season, no. And so I'd say if you got to the game and lost, especially if you lost to, say, Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, who I think would certainly be a worthy team. To me, that's the only team that has the makings of a Super Bowl champion on it right now. That doesn't mean the Patriots can't get there. Certainly doesn't mean that the Saints can't get there or even the Steelers can't get there again. But I'd have to agree with that. So that's an interesting question you posed there, Tyler, and I'm not sure I entirely answered it, but I would say right now, yes, I think that would be satisfactory, but I think most fans will say no, they're disappointed. Steve says, as for the Indy game, I think about the fourth quarter slump as much as the players care to remain competitive in that game. Well, that would probably explain then the lack of nitpicking today. I'm not worried about it. I'm sick and tired of having a knee-jerk reaction to poor play. If we've learned anything this year, it is that the Indy game is no indication of the Redskins game, which will be no indication of the Tebow game. Notice he said Tebow game and not the Broncos. I'm not worried or remotely concerned about this team based on the Indy game. You are what your record says you are. The New England Patriots are 9-3, sitting in great position to get a first round bye in the playoffs. Thank you, Steve in Albany. Well, shut my mouth then, huh, Steve? Tim on Facebook. No question we've missed on quite a few draft picks. Thankfully, we do better than average with undrafted rookies. What about Polian, draft guru and expert team builder? Where are all his guys from the last 5 years? He deserves some of the hacking too, Tim. There's no doubt about that, especially with the way this team has obviously fallen completely apart in the absence of Peyton Manning. Tim says, Price had his chances in practice, I'm sure. He didn't show enough to get on the field on Sundays. If he doesn't understand where he's supposed to run practice, they won't put him out there and cause an interception from running the wrong route. If Price couldn't get it done against this defense in practice, see ya. You know, that's an interesting point. If you can't be where you're supposed to be in practice against this defense, what makes you think you're going to do it against arguably better defenses in a game situation? Okay, I actually think that's a pretty good point, Tim. And I'm glad you brought that up. That's good. He says, John, it's not worth arguing with Andy about Taylor Price or much else for that matter. One glance at his power rankings tells you all you need to know about the balloon knot. He says, now the game. While watching the fourth quarter, I put it down to going into prevent defense, as we have a tendency to do at times, and let them get back in it. But Belichick stated in his angry press conference that they had the same defensive calls until the final drive as they had all game. Well, you can't see how deep the safeties and corners are playing on the TV broadcast. So, as you were there, is that true? Give me running up the score, crybabies anytime, Tim said. Well, they were deeper, okay? They were deeper. I also didn't think they gave attention to Garcon. Garcon was just ripping them to shreds in the secondary. They stayed with base coverage. They stayed with base coverage the whole game because, frankly, I don't think they thought Dan Orlovsky could beat them. Now, ultimately, he didn't. And ultimately, the bottom line is getting a win. So I know it seems like we're probably getting our, you know, panties in a wad here over, you know, a win because they did win the game. But the fact is that those guys were playing deep most of the game. Now, you know, the one consistent thing that we've banged on in the secondary this season has to do with the fact that the corners have played soft. They've played soft. They've played softer than normal. Don't know why, but they have. Obviously, that's a huge reason why this team has given up as much yardage as it has defensively. Still ranking dead last in the NFL in pass defense yardage. They've been playing soft all year. So because they've played soft all year well, then you're going to get what you get. And that's what you get. So, you know, I think he was probably accurate when he says, yeah, they were playing the same way the whole game, because they were deep the whole game. They were playing off guys like Garcon and Austin Collie, who they have a tremendous amount of respect for. And yeah, oh yeah, 87-2. Oh yeah, Mr. Big Time. So I think they were giving those guys some cushion, feeling like Orlovsky was going to have to beat them. He didn't quite get there. Lucky Patriots, right? Okay. Let's get to Erica in Mississippi. She says, I'm not really worried about this game. I think Bill was trying out a lot of things in this game. It got bad in the end, but he saw what he needed to see, especially that they can't play man-to-man defense. Well, boy, if you had to wait until this last Sunday to see that you can't play man defense, then what the hell are you looking at? I know this team can't play man. They can't play man, but you don't have any safety. I mean, you had Matthew Slater starting at safety, okay? So you're not going to get a whole lot of help from the safety. They really didn't have any choice but to play man-to-man. And like I said, I think they were fortunate that Orlovsky or even Curtis Painter, I'm sure they were thinking that it might be Painter, but I'm sure they decided, well, you know what, I don't think Orlovsky can beat us anyway. So let's make him beat us. Let's make sure that, you know, a guy like Joe Adai and Donald Brown, those guys can't beat us in the middle. Let's make sure that Orlovsky's got to go over the top. And let's see if he can do it. I'm sure that was part of it. And he finally got hot in the fourth quarter. Team was still playing soft. He finally got hot in the fourth quarter. I think they ran different routes. I think it was more the plays that the Colts were calling than the defense the Patriots were calling. I think they made a concerted effort to target those guys in those mid-range 12 to 15-yard routes. That's what they were able to connect on in the fourth quarter. Patriots didn't adjust to that, and that's why we saw the gouging begin. Erica says, I think the embarrassment of this loss/win will motivate them more this week against the Redskins. The Redskins are not a good team, but I think Shanahan can be pretty crafty. They were hanging with the Jets until the last quarter. That I agree with. Totally agree with that. Although the Redskins think have lost a couple of extra offensive players today. I know that there was a decision to come down over failed drug tests for two of their starters. And we'll catch up on the Redskins, I think, a little bit later today and certainly in tomorrow's playbook. But Redskins have their own problems, but they are formidable on defense. They have one of the best pass rushers in the NFL in Brian Arakpo. Erica says, I think it was better for them to have this kind of game against the Colts last Sunday. Instead of the Redskins this Sunday. Bill will use it this week, so I'm not worried at all. Sounds like a vote of confidence. Tim in Baltimore. John, I think the main issue with Pats fans' frustration is not that the Patriots haven't been great. They have. It's that they had a chance to be the best ever. They had a chance to end all the debates. They had a chance to end the debate about who were the best coach, the best quarterback, the best team, the best dynasty ever. I think they still have a chance to seal the deal during the next few years, but we'll see. So we're going back to 07, then, I guess, is where we're leading with this, huh, Tim? Gosh, you win that game in 07, and then does that really change things, the way you look at it? Or does it just increase the expectations and bring up bigger disappointments when you fall short? Says, also, I know that if Baltimore and New England went out, it will come down to strength of victory for the tiebreaker. Would it be possible for Patriots.com and Patriots.com Radio to keep listeners up to date weekly on which team is currently ahead in the strength of victory column? This will help us know what teams to root for every Sunday. All right, there you go, Kev. There's our duty. There's our assignment. We need to stay up on the strength of victory statistic.
Ours isn't all that great at the moment.
I know.
I
don't think it looks good.
Looking at it earlier in the day,
yeah.
Like Baltimore had a decent one. Pittsburgh had a decent one, and that was probably largely because they played each other, and they're both 9-3.
Right. I agree. And ours is not going to get any better because of the teams we're playing. Although Denver.
Yeah, Denver.
Denver will help.
Denver will help.
Because Denver is going to have a winning record. They're 7-5. So even if they lost this week, they're still going to have a winning record, and they'll probably still be at least tied for first in their division. So, yeah, Denver will help. But we'll see if we can't keep up on that. We'll try to keep you up to date on all the tiebreakers as far as the seedings are concerned. And we usually do that here in the playbook. We usually do that. John in Alaska. Wow, we've gone from Nicaragua to Alaska today in the playbook. Wow. Okay. Here's my issues. Fourth quarter was terrible in all phases. What's up with that? I mean, we've kind of gone through that, John, but that's okay. They just played soft. That simple. There was no sense of urgency when you're up 31-3. That can't happen. We don't know as fans why things happen with the team, and while I'm not asking for Bill to give away secrets, it would be nice if someone in this organization came out and offered some insight on why things happen. Sorry, but the atypical non-answers are just that, non-answers. Last, I'm not happy with the slowness of PFW releasing the Droid app for the paper. Let's get with it. Well, you'll have to deal with Freddie on that one. That's his bailiwick. But you're right about the non-answers. But that's it is what it is around here. That's our answer for everything. We've learned. I mean, it's been that way for 10, 11 years now, and it's going to stay that way as long as Bill Belichick's running the show. Answers will be non-answers. That's part of the reason why I think we've had so much success in 11 years of doing Patriots.com radio, because, you know, we're the ones that are left to try to read between the quotes. Read between the lines, read between the, you know, the sound bites to give you some insight as to what, you know, we think could be going on. Some explanation, splaining to do. So that's, you know, we give you what we think our best guess is based on, you know, previous history and all those things. Thank you, John. I hope it's not terribly cold where you are, but had a friend of mine who Facebooked me last week and said it was 5 degrees below zero in Fairbanks, Alaska, which is pretty typical for this time of year, as I was in Tampa, Florida last Thursday, 60 degrees on December the 1st in game time. So a little bit of a disparity there. And we've heard from Nicaragua, and sitting on the beach and drinking a beer, to Alaska again today. Wow. From all corners. Doug from Jersey. I'm a longtime fan, but as fans we forget we aren't at practice, we aren't in the meetings, we aren't in the game. The cuts happen because there's a reason. Just like you said, Price most likely did not fit in the scheme. The culture Bill put into place is a loose version of Landry's and Walsh's style, where it was a culture and a system, and if you didn't fit, unless you were an ultra talent, you just don't make the cut. See, you know what? Honestly, Douglas, that is as good an explanation for what happened with Taylor Price as any I've seen. The culture that's put in place here is similar to what was expected of the Tom Landry Dallas Cowboys and the Bill Walsh 49ers. You fit into the culture, you fit into the system, they draft to it, they traded to it. You didn't fit it unless you were the quote-unquote elite superstar. You're done. You're toast. You're not getting the second chance, or you're getting a second chance, but you're not getting the third and fourth. And ultimately, I think that's what happened here, regardless of Andy's opinion of Taylor Price or Paul's opinion of Taylor Price. He didn't produce. And their argument is, well, he didn't get out on the field. You don't know that. They don't know that because you and we are not allowed to see the entire practice. So you can like him all you want. I don't even know what you base that on. How could you have possibly seen him enough to know that you like him? That's my whole thing with Ross Idaling. I don't know that I like the guy. Everybody says, oh, he's good-looking corner. Well, how do you know? Hasn't played. So how the heck do you know? Can't make a judgment until you see the guy play. Wow. Okay. Doug says, because playing time should equal production, not just playing time. He earned a chance. Now he earned himself a cut. As cold as that sounds, why are we going to question Bill? He's won 3 championships, 2 more with the Giants. He gave a chance to this 6th round, 199th pick because he earned his practice spot and he earned playing time through production, speaking of Brady. So Price and anyone else that is drafted and cut has earned that. Bill does not taketh what you earneth, so to speak. All right. Good email, Douglas. Appreciate that. Jamal in New York. Just wanted you to let everyone know Tom Brady is 1-6 against the Broncos. So that might be the only loss I see for the rest of the season. So once again, we're jumping ahead now. We're going past the Redskins. We're getting right to Tebow Bowl, or whatever the hell it is that we're going to call it next week. Alex in Oxford. Just because I'm a nut, I wanted to share with you some Patriots playoff projections. Here we go. If the Patriots win the remaining four games, they definitely will get either the one or the two. They will get the one if the Ravens lose at least once, unless the Steelers also finish 13-3, but the Texans don't. In other words, if the Ravens and Patriots went out, Ravens would beat the Pats for the number one seed based on winning percentage against common opponents. If the Ravens lose, Steelers would beat the Patriots for number one if they both went out based on their head-to-head. But if the Patriots, Steelers, and Texans all finish 13-3, the Patriots would win the one based on the complex rules for breaking a triple tie. Okay. Here are the remaining games with Pats, Ravens, Steelers, Texans. I won't go into it. He says the Patriots should win these four games, which, as we all know, Skins, Broncos, Dolphins, Bills. Biggest test might come against the Dolphins, but we played them at home December 24. Ravens might get a test from the Chargers, but their hardest remaining game will probably be against the Bengals in the last week. Bengals will be playing at home, probably for their playoff lives. Steelers will have a test against the 49ers. They're trying to keep the Saints off to win the number two seed in the NFC, the 49ers, that is. And the Texans will be challenged by the Bengals, the Panthers, and the Titans. So he says, I see the Texans losing at least one, but I think either the Ravens or the Steelers will win out, which means the Patriots will probably get the two. In that case, we'll have to cheer for the number one to lose in the second round because I don't want to go to Baltimore or Pittsburgh. That'd be tough, especially against the Steelers. If the Patriots lose one of the four remaining games, I think they still have a good shot at the two, but at worst, the Patriots should get the three. Okay, interesting scenario that Alex from Oxford paints.
Popsicle headache.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting brain freeze. But you know what? We've had some people ask for it, Pete, and we've had some had some listeners who have done the homework.
Look what's right here. It's the first thing up here on my
I see that. I
on
see
my,
that.
My
yeah.
screen.
Look at that. Playoff race.
I was going through it myself.
Popsicle freeze. Brain freeze.
There's so many things. There's a whole month of football left. So
I know. But it is kind of fun to look
I'm concerned about you. I'm looking at your possible travel schedule for college football next year in the Big East. Boise State, have fun. San Diego State.
I'll have fun there.
Houston.
I'll have fun in Houston.
Yeah, I know, but it's just so spread out. SMU, UCF.
Dude, I'm totally there.
You ever been to Boise State?
I have not been to Boise. I've been to Idaho. I've not been to Boise.
Why would you go to Idaho?
I actually was up there for a Boy Scout Jamboree years ago.
Interesting.
You going to Boy Scout joke now, Pete?
I'm just an
Eagle Scout, bro. All right.
But you grew up in Texas and you went to Idaho?
Yeah. Yeah. I camped in Idaho.
Field trip?
A little bit more than that.
Okay.
It's killing me over here. It's killing me.
No,
it's called hiking in the mountains and swimming and canoeing in the rivers.
I'm picturing you and your chums hanging around the campfire roasting marshmallows.
My
in Idaho.
Chums?
Well, your friends, your Boy Scout.
No, it wasn't all about we didn't roast marshmallows. Oh. We roasted each other, but we didn't roast marshmallows.
I'm sure.
Actually, what we did is we picked on the Canadian Scouts that were behind us.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We'd get into little fights and all kinds of stuff with these guys. So.
I haven't been to Idaho yet.
We thought the Canadian Scouts were a bunch of dweebs.
See, these are the things that nobody knows about you, that only I can get out of you. Who would know you were a Boy Scout in Idaho at one time?
Spent a week in Idaho
to
one
drive,
year.
Fly, drive there, obviously.
We bussed. We took a
bus
cross country.
Texas
we bussed all
Idaho.
The way from Texas. All
How
the way
long
up.
Does that take?
Well, we actually stopped along the way. We stopped in Colorado and visited the Air Force Academy. And
Did anybody want to defect before you got to Idaho?
No, nobody wanted to defect. Right. We actually had a very good trip. And we spent quite a bit of time, believe it or not, quality time in Montana, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
Love big sky country.
Yeah, Ted Kaczynski enjoyed it.
Butte, Montana.
Butte, Montana. I know.
Butte, Montana.
Yeah. Butte, Montana.
So, it was gorgeous.
Big hockey area.
It was big.
Calgary Flames, I think, they're big fans of.
And the big fans of the Grizz. So there you go. So, yeah, that was once upon a time. Once upon a time.
Wow.
I have been to all 50 states, Pete.
When you have your best-selling memoirs come out.
It will.
That
would include.
Okay.
The journey will be included in it. But I hit all 50 states by age 50.
That's great. I haven't done that yet. I probably traveled more outside this country than in this country.
You'd probably be surprised how many states you've been to. Airports don't count.
No, I know. But I'd like to get. I'd actually like to go skiing in Colorado. Go see Montana.
Absolutely.
I hadn't been there yet.
I think the Great Northwest is a vastly underrated part of the country. And I would highly encourage Idaho and Montana as places to visit.
And it's great for witness protection. It's also a great spot.
It's also true. You only have like 10 people per square mile in like Wyoming. So that's actually
really
pretty, yeah, that's not very dense.
Now I heard you could like drive through Wyoming liquor stores, grab beer, and like drink and drive, like or used to be able to do that. Like you could, like a certain amount, like if you just get a 10-ounce draft beer, you could like drive to the liquor store like McDonald's and go through and get a beer and drive away.
I'm not sure.
Somebody
told
me that once. I wasn't sure if I believed it or not, but they were pretty. It was an older guy. It wasn't some kid in their 20s.
Huh.
Like, yeah, I drove up to the liquor store, got a draft beer, and drove on.
I'll be dang. I did not know that.
There's some like open. I mean, it's kind of crazy nowadays, but.
Right.
I don't know, just crazy things you remember.
Yeah, okay. What's shaking today, my man?
No, that's just,
playoff scenario.
playoff scenario. And I once again, it's so funny, the overreaction to you know. Look, everybody was frustrated how that game ended. I am convinced that if they just had Brady Welker and Gronkowski out there and nobody else, they could have put up 80 points. If you go back and watch that game again, It is just pathetic how bad Indianapolis tanked that game. And the Patriots did some good things, but, you know, for Welker to catch 11 straight passes, for Gronkowski to be that wide open, and Gannon was right about yelling and screaming about being in the red zone and all that stuff.
I heard a good theory, Pete, that Bill Belichick completely dogged it in the fourth quarter because he wanted to show what kind of frauds the Colts were being 0-11, that they were tanking it for the number one pick.
I don't know. I don't know if Bill thinks that way.
I don't think so.
I would have a hard time believing.
I don't think so. But I heard somebody say that. And I'm like, that's actually kind of interesting.
And then you hear the people, why are they in the no huddle? They're running up the score. They're also working on a lot of different things. And this was like an exhibition game for them. And I didn't want to see McCourty get burned the way he did down the stretch. And there are a couple things that they could have done differently. But my God, you know, the people who were yelling and screaming about this game were the same people who were yelling and screaming before the Jet game who gave them no chance, and they blow them out by 21 points. Now they, you know, and a lot of it, don't get kid yourself, a lot of it has to do with people who gambled on the game. Who pissed off they didn't score twice by 21.
You saw the mass exodus when they made it 31-17.
Yeah.
Everybody got up and left.
Yeah. So, I mean, some people's emotions unfortunately ride high or low on how many shekels they put on the game. But
yeah, of course.
Hey, I mean, overall, they're up 31-3. I mean, am I surprised they got garbage touchdowns? No. I expected a couple. I didn't expect the last one. But, look at who they are. You really think, like, Slater and Molden and those guys are going to be out there complaining? I mean, I hope not. And they played pretty well for them. I mean, those guys played pretty well for a good chunk of that game. You know, it's the worst guy out there at one point. It seemed like McCourty on defensive back. But,
yeah.
But, come on. Tracy White, Molden, Matthew Slater starting it over Sergio Brown? Think about that.
I know.
I mean, Edelman and Slater played really well. I thought they did.
It's just
an overreaction every single week. So the Patriots hold the Giants. I mean, 24-20. I mean, it took a last second thing this year, you know, for whatever. So, and the Giants go and shred Green Bay's defense.
Right.
To the tune of 35 points a game they could have won. So what does that mean?
It tells me that the Patriots are pretty close to the Packers.
I just think it's a lot more it's just a lot more even around the NFL than people
There's
think.
No question about that. And I've said that in the opening hour of the show. What you have to realize here is that there just isn't a dominating defense. There's no real defense that scares you right now in terms of being able to shut you down. And there are only a couple of other offenses out there that I think that can keep up with what the Patriots have. They happen to reside in the NFC. You've got New Orleans and you've got Green Bay. And the secret to winning games against teams like that when they have defenses that are probably about like you are, the secret of beating them is turnovers.
Yeah, and the thing is, incredibly, Felger and somewhat Curran were the voices of reason Sunday night. The only ones, I thought, Borges was his usual, you know, agenda-driven, pathetic self, and that, you know, they suck and, you know, all that crap. But Felger brought up a great point, and it's one I was thinking myself as well, which is why I think it's great, is because you know, more than likely, hopefully, the playoffs are going to have to come through this stadium. The Patriots AFC is going to have to come through here. If that's the case, this team, this defense, very much like Indianapolis in 06 and New Orleans in 08 or 09, whenever it was, does not have to play great. They just have to be kind of decent.
Adequate.
Adequate. And the rest will take care of itself.
Right. I agree.
That's why I'm not panicking about
overreaction. And I think honestly, and I said this again earlier in the show, I think honestly that's what the Patriots deemed this defense to be before the season started.
And I think it'll be better than that.
I think they knew this was going to happen.
And I think it will be one. I mean, you know, look, if you're telling me in the Super Bowl that Tracy White and Matthew Slater and Antoine Molden are going to be starting, okay, then, you know, there might be some issues there, but. I'm going on the fact that, you know, Chung comes back and McCourty starts to, you know, play a little bit better. He doesn't have to play great. He doesn't have to even play as well as he did last year, but have some semblance of the game that he had last year. He's the only one that kind of worries me a little bit. Spikes, I mean, no spikes as well, over the last couple of weeks. I mean, these are pretty big names out, and they're holding their own.
Right.
What else are they supposed to do?
Right. Agreed.
I mean, no one likes to wait to see that game for them. Nobody does. To see them give up 21 points.
It was ugly.
But, you know, not again, the last one, if they had not given up that last touchdown, would people still be bitching and moaning? The ones who bet 21-point favorite would be bitching and moaning, but, you know.
Well, the fact that it came down to the point where they actually had a chance to kick an onside kick to recover it and tie the score.
Yeah.
When you had that game 31-3.
And this is why, and this is the other ones, and they used to have arguments with Dennis and Callahan on EEI about this all the time, because those two were, and they weren't alone. Why are they running up the score? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? Well, now you know why in professional sports or why in Division I college sport, whatever. You put the pedal to the metal and you wipe them out.
Especially when you know you don't have a defense.
Exactly. So, anybody who complained about what happened on Sunday that's a fan, I don't want to hear a complaint ever again about them winning 55-10. You know, because there is a reason why.
Agree with that. All right, Pete's coming up in a couple of minutes. Yep. Josh in Washington sends this. He says, if this team makes it to the Super Bowl and loses, I will be devastated, but feel that the season was quite a success. Now, that's a reasonable reaction to the question that was asked a little bit earlier. And then Chris says, there are so many nits to pick from the Colt game. I think we're all just overwhelmed. But the more I think about it, the fourth quarter near meltdown seems to be a combination of overconfidence and experimentation with personnel. And it nearly backfired. I'm not worried that either of those two things will rear their ugly head in the playoffs, assuming we get there. Well, you're going to get there. But there will be no reason for overconfidence when or if our secondary takes the field in January. Sure, there may be some personnel shuffling, but I think there will be more out of necessity than pure experimentation. I want to move on with the Colts, which is just a strange situation to begin with. Not only was there no Manning, but no Painter either. That was just begging for ugly football. Totally agreed. Totally agree, Chris. Meanwhile, I agree with your thoughts about Denver. Not only the current mystique and the solid D and that Tebow guy, but the Pats always have trouble in Denver. Just the rarefied air, apparently. But this is not to overlook Washington. But really, I am overlooking Washington. He says Patriots 39, Redskins 10. Nothing like ending with that one to stop the day. All right, coming up on the program tomorrow in the playbook, Ryan O'Halloran of CSN Washington will join us in the 2 o'clock hour, and we'll get kind of a breakdown on the current state of the Washington Redskins, and we'll figure out where those guys are.
Did you say tomorrow?
It's Thursday.
Thursday.
I see it. Okay, Thursday. Never mind then. So we'll have him on Thursday. Okay.
Thursday before Russell.
Okay. So we're still working on tomorrow is what we're thinking then. Okay. Well, then we'll turn the page to Washington anyway because we have to. We have to give the Redskins a little bit. I know they're 4-8. But you know what happens when you overlook?
Tough game.
You know what
that will not
when
be an easy
overlook?
Game. It's a tough game.
I tend to think it probably will. All right. Same Pats time, same Pats channel tomorrow. Pete Shepard's coming up next.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.